part of the locomotive that gets us there.
That's right.
You can do it. With your help, we can do this.
We are the little community radio station that could, but we can only do it with you.
877-500-5266. Don't you love the smell of a brand new t-shirt? Well, you can have a K-Boot.
You can have.
For only $5 a month, just getting your feet wet with the price of a bus fare and 3 minutes on the phone at 877-500-5266. I'm getting the wrap-up sign. Oh, my goodness. So you got to, that's got
to
be you.
You have to
that's
call
gotta
now.
Be
now.
Right
now.
877-500-5266 or online, kboo.fm. Drop by in person, 20 Southeast 8th. Come on in, see how your money is spent here on your community radio station. But the easiest thing for you to do is grab that phone and push those buttons, 877-500-5266. Connect with an actual human being this morning. Tell them that you appreciate independent media and you are a proud sponsor. You are a KBOO member. 877-500-5266.
Comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is just about 9:01 a.m. Coming up on KBOO, it's APA Compass. Featuring actor and comedian Asif Manvi speaking about his memoir, No Land's Man. Liz Rogers features the powerful Sikh play Kultar's Mime, and Dimay Roberts has an angry APA minute. At 10, Air Cascadia is off today. We'll hear Flashpoints featuring an interview with Russ Baker about the Bush dynasty, including Jeb, and America's invisible government and the hidden history of the last 50 years. At 11 on the Radio Zine, host Michelle Schroeder Fletcher speaks with investigative journalist and best-selling author Charles Lewis about his new book, 935 Lies, The Future of Truth and the Decline of America's Moral Integrity. That's all coming up on your community radio right after this.
Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 38th Annual Portland International Film Festival, taking place now through February 21st at many locations all over Portland. This year's festival brings over 150 films from around the globe to the Portland metro area. There are strong selections of Hispanic language films, new directors, and documentaries, as well as PIFF After Dark screenings. Again, that's the 38th Annual Portland International Film Festival running through February 21st. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO would like to thank our community partners that donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Simpatica Dining Hall, located at 828 Southeast Ash, with private dining for celebrations, family gatherings, and corporate meetings. Rental info at simpaticapdx.com. Lunch was provided by Sweet Basil Thai Cuisine, located at 3135 Northeast Broadway, serving home-style Thai food, representing a wide array of dishes cooked by Thai chefs. Dinner was provided by Ling Garden, located at 915 Northwest 21st Avenue, serving Northern Chinese cuisine for lunch, dinner, and delivery. Produce was provided this week by Grocery Getter Organic, specializing in home delivery of organic groceries. Grocery Getter Organic is an independently owned local small business. For more information, their website is ggetter.com.
Tuning in to APA Compass, the Pacific Northwest's only Asian and Pacific American
Public Affairs Program. Today on APA Compass, Sarika Mehta talks with Indian American actor and comedian Asif Manvi. Listeners will also get treated to KBOO's own stage and studio producer Dime Roberts as she contributes her Angry APA Minute. And as APA Compass gears up for our 10th anniversary program in May, we'll be featuring pieces from our archives. Our first featured archive is a clip from our very first edition of Pop Watch. This aired back in November of 2010. But first, I had a chance to speak with Meher Kaur and Supreet Singh, the daughter and father team behind the performance Kultar's Mind. A few weeks ago, I had the opportunity to watch a performance of Kultar's Mime, a play directed by Meher Kaur. Kultar's Mime is self-described as drawing upon the raw imagery of two poems, In the City of Slaughter, written by Hebrew poet Chaim Bialik, and Kultar's Mime, written by Kaur's father, Supreet Singh, telling a story of human suffering and courage, reminding us that in the end, all innocent victims are the same, regardless of how they worship God and what tongues they speak. After the play, I sat down with Meher Kaur and Supreet Singh to talk about the inspiration and adaptation of Supreet's poem to Meher's stage performance.
So the play takes place in an art gallery, and when the audience enters, they see the artists that have created this gallery of paintings, and a tour guide brings them through the gallery and explains what the paintings are of. And this group of artists is a Jewish collective, and they don't, that prior to their project, they didn't know anything about the 1984 pogrom, which I thought might resonate with some of the audience members. Maybe they didn't know about it either. And so when we were originally putting this play together, even before the Jewish poem, it was meant to be a play about looking at a story that's not necessarily your own, but still finding it really personal and being very passionate about it. So it was definitely a deliberate decision to look at it through the other lens. And I thought that it would be really empowering for the Sikh community to realize that their story is not something that they need to hide or try to brush under the rug because nobody else cares about it or nobody else wants to do anything. And for them to see these stories that they all have heard about and some of them know personally be staged again in front of their eyes, and to see that it is something that they should be worrying about still 30 years after.
I asked Supreet to provide some historical context of his poem for our listeners.
The events depicted in the play occurred in 1984 in the capital of India, Delhi. The Prime Minister of India, Indira Gandhi, was assassinated by her Sikh bodyguards. And in retaliation, her political party organized a massacre of Sikhs in Delhi that continued unabated for several days. And to provide a bit of further context to that, the Sikhs had been agitating mostly for political rights and some religious rights in India for several years prior to the events of 1984. There had been a protracted struggle which had started out being very peaceful, and when it became very apparent that there was really not going to be any progress through those means, the struggle really escalated. And it reached a flashpoint in the summer of 1984. Without getting into the very convoluted and complicated history, there was a very charismatic Sikh religious figure whose name was Jarnail Singh Bhindranwale. And he had become a very visible symbol of Sikh resistance. And he had ensconced himself in the Golden Temple complex in Amritsar, which is one of the most important shrines of Sikhism. So the government of India had portrayed him as a terrorist, and ostensibly, to flush him out of the Golden Temple complex, a military operation was launched in June of 1984 called Operation Blue Star. And Janelle Singh Bhindranwale, with a small band of followers, was in one of the buildings in the complex called the Akal Takht, which is generally considered to be the seat of temporal authority within the Sikh faith. With the help of a former Indian Army general, he had fortified that particular building. And what the government anticipated would be a quick surgical commando raid went on, turned into a raging battle that lasted several days, which culminated in the Indian Army sending in tanks and heavy artillery and bombing the complex. So in the battle that was fought, Janelle Singh Bhindranwale and his band of defenders were all killed. And many, many innocent pilgrims who were in the temple complex lost their lives. The attack on the Golden Temple was an earth-shattering event for the Sikh community. It was inconceivable that the Golden Temple be attacked by the Indian government. Everyone was in a state of shock. And her two bodyguards decided to essentially take revenge against Indira Gandhi by assassinating her. And that history is also very convoluted, and there's a lot of murkiness about what actually happened. But the fact of the matter is that she was assassinated by her two Sikh bodyguards, who were deeply wounded by the attack on the Golden Temple several months prior. And her assassination led to this paroxysm of violence that gripped Delhi for several days.
And we're briefly interrupting this morning's edition of APA Compass to remind you that your community radio station is in the midst of the winter membership drive. And this is a wonderful time for us to get to interface directly with you in Radioland, entice you to start or renew your membership right now. It's as easy as picking up your phone and calling us toll free from anywhere in North America, 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-KBOO. Of course, you can always do that online at our website, KBOO.FM. APA Compass is absolutely signature programming for the Mighty 90.7. Here's where we're weaving together this tapestry of voices to do what is left undone by mainstream commercial milquetoast media. We're asking you to put just a few of your pennies and nickels behind this valuable enterprise. Think about it. Since June 1968, we've been recruiting from all different communities, sub-communities, different groups in our communities, giving them training and giving them access to the airwaves and teaching them to be citizen journalists. And they go out and they do amazing things, and they bring that information back into our lives. APA Compass is a perfect example. We don't hear much from Asian and Pacific Islanders and from all across the continent of Asia on media in Portland. And indeed, you see a lot of interesting information about why is it that Asians don't get cast in lead roles in Hollywood, et cetera, et cetera. But that's pretty much the opposite of what your community radio station is doing. We are trying to weave together as many voices as possible. And you don't have to love each of them equally. What you have to be committed to is the project of getting them all on the air. So please, for every voice that you've ever heard, whether you liked it or not, make sure that you gave a little support and started or renewed your membership, preferably with a monthly deduction. Call right now, won't you? Please don't wait for someone else to do it. 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-KBOO. I dare say it's taking more energy to resist our entreaties than it will to just take a moment or two to start that membership or renew that membership. It's terribly important that you do so. It will improve the quality of the signal, and you will have engaged in a bit of checkbook activism. We're going to hand it back to APA Compass, but we're standing by for your calls right now. You can do that online, kboo.fm, or toll free, 877-500-KBOO.
Can you talk about what inspired you to write the poem?
So I was a young man at college, and I was at an engineering college several hours away from Delhi, which was largely untouched by the events that occurred in Delhi. There were some disturbances on our campus, but nothing of the scale of Delhi occurred where I was. This was a small town called Pilani. Now, I have to confess that even though I was a Sikh, for a number of reasons, the events of 1984 didn't affect me a great deal then. And one of the reasons was that India is a very class-conscious society, and as is usually the case, it was mostly the poor Sikhs of Delhi who bore the brunt of the violence that occurred after Indira Gandhi's death. So I'm almost ashamed to admit that I didn't feel a lot of empathy for them, because even though they were Sikhs, I didn't see them as being, quote-unquote, my people. There was a concerted effort by the Indian government and Indian media, which was tightly controlled by government, to vilify the Sikhs as militants, terrorists, bent on destroying the Indian Union. And I have to say that even a lot of well-meaning people in India at that time felt that what happened in Delhi in 1984 after the assassination of Indira Gandhi was unfortunate, but the Sikhs kind of asked for it. This was the feeling that was created in the general populace through the Indian government's propaganda. And I have to confess that even as a young Sikh, I myself felt prey to that propaganda, and I felt that I carried a certain amount of guilt. So even I, as a young Sikh, felt that what happened was horrible, but maybe we kind of asked for it. I came to the U.S. in 1987, and I was fortunate enough to find some fairly interesting works that had been written right after 1984. One of them was a report titled Who Are the Guilty, which is also known as the Black Book. In fact, a lot of the factual information in the play, which the actors referred to during the performance, comes from this report. I'll give you a couple of quick examples. The fee paid to the murderers by politicians of the Congress Party, which is documented in this book, was a bottle of liquor and 100 rupees, which is roughly $1.60. So that's the amount of money that was paid to each thug that they brought in to rape and murder and plunder. Pieces of factual information from the report talked about the three politicians who are portrayed in the play. So this was one of the writings that greatly influenced me. It was not readily accessible in India, but I was able to read it here in the U.S. in 1987. A second piece that I read was an article called Gangster Rule by a progressive journalist in India called Madhu Kishwar. She very clearly wrote what had happened in Delhi, and it was a gripping account and a terrifying account. The third thing that I read was an academic paper published by an anthropologist, Dr. Veena Das, who was in Delhi at the time. She studied the children who survived the massacre and followed them for a few years and wrote about their experiences. A couple of the stories really spoke to me. One of them was a story of a young child called Avtar, who was deaf and mute, whose father had been lynched before his eyes. And this child, being deaf and mute, couldn't articulate his pain, and he would demonstrate it by acting out how his father was lynched. So this was, the imagery of that story was, terrifying. And, there was a similar story about a young girl whose father was burned alive after being doused with gasoline in front of her eyes. And this young child apparently held on to her father's hand all the while he was being burned. So reading things like these created a tremendous ferment in my mind. And what poured out was essentially the poem Kultar's Mime. So that's how the poem came into being 25 years ago. And I'll turn it over to Meher so that she can talk about how the poem turned into a play.
So I've always been really interested in theater as a way of expression and art. And when I was in my first year of college, I was looking for a story that I was going to be really passionate about to direct, because I was just starting to get into directing then. And I remembered this story and this poem that my dad had written a few years before, So all these years later, in my first year of college, I remembered this poem, and I read it again, and I realized what a visual poem it is, and it was really a poem of pictures and imagery. And I thought it would be really cool to adapt it into a play that was based all in art, where a lot of the scenery and the visuals that we saw were based in art. And so I got a fellow smithy at my school to make these paintings for us. We explored the play a little bit and tried to glean the best images to show on stage. And she created this work. Her name is Evanlee Davis. And then a few months later, it was staged and performed in Hopkinton, Massachusetts, with a small group of high school actors that I had known for a little bit, just to try and see what could become of this play. And then we put it away for a little bit. And then a year or so later, my dad discovered this other poem by Chaim Bialik called In the City of Slaughter. And it is about the Kishinev pogrom, which was a massacre of the Jews. And we realized that that was also a very visual poem and that it could be woven into the play. So we did that and we revised the play a little bit. And then we cast it and we were given a platform by the Sick Research Institute, and we've been touring for about 4 months now.
Have you gotten any feedback about, you know, why aren't there Sick community members telling this story? Why isn't it coming through them?
We've had a couple of instances where this has come up, and overwhelmingly the sentiment has been that having non-Sikh and even non-South Asian actors portraying these events and telling these stories adds a powerful layer to the production and really makes the point that at the end, when you strip away the ethnic identities, you're just left with perpetrators and victims, and the horrible actions are all the same, and the pain is still the same. So there have been a couple of comments where people have expressed concern that, this could have been an opportunity for South Asian actors, but they missed out on the opportunity because you're not using South Asian actors. And really, our response to that has been that this is how the production has always been conceived. When Mayor wrote the play, this is how the play was written. It was written for non-South Asian characters because that's how she had conceived it.
Can you speak to any similarities in the experiences of the Sikh community in India in 1984 and what we saw happen to the Muslim community here in the U.S. after the tragedies of 9/11?
Just as it was ludicrous to kill 3,000 plus Sikhs in Delhi because a Sikh assassinated Indira Gandhi, it was similarly ludicrous for the Muslim community in the U.S. to be targeted in the manner that it was after 9/11. And the notion that it's okay to vilify an entire community based on the actions of a few individuals is absolutely reprehensible. And in that sense, I do see a tremendous amount of similarity. And the question really hits home because, the irony is that post 9/11, a lot of Sikhs were mistaken for Muslims and were targeted. And that really helped us appreciate what the Muslim community was going through in the backlash that followed 9/11.
Great. Thank you very much. And APA Compass appreciates your time.
And thanks for listening to this membership drive.
And we are back briefly to Membership Central and briefly interrupting this morning's edition of APA Compass because we are indeed in the middle of the Winter Membership Drive 2015. Thank you so much for tuning in. My name is Justin, and we have a modest goal to make sure that APA Compass Collective reaches their part of the pie. That's $500. There are thousands of you listening, and we can entice a few of you to the phones to support this critical programming, which you're not getting anyplace else. It's as simple as taking just a moment out of your time and a moment out of your day and your phone out of your pocket and dialing toll-free 877-500-5500. 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-KBOO. Of course, always online at KBOO.FM. You know, something, I heard something that really struck me in that interview that really goes a long way towards KBOO's overall mission. And what happens is when you strip away the particulars of different actors involved in different situations, what you find are the same kinds of experiences. And I think that that goes so well with KBOO's effort to weave all of these voices into this tapestry that is community radio. Whether we're talking about Asian or Pacific Islanders, whether we're talking about people from South Asia, India, whether we're talking about Jews, whether we're talking about Black Lives Mattering, what we find is when we strip away the different cultural bits, what we find are hearts and lives being affected. And without the access to that information, we don't know that. And we remain cocooned. We remain sort of inured to the sufferings of others. And I think that's one of the most important things about the KBOO signal, that we are bringing these different experiences into all of our lives. And we see, on one hand, the differences between us, maybe the different cultural elements, but we see deep down that there is this vast overarching agreement, this vast overarching symmetry of experience. And I dare you to put a price on that, whether that's pennies, nickels, dimes, dollars, it doesn't matter so much. But won't you please call up and stand up and be counted at 877-500-5266. I mean earnestly to point out that we are enriched when we receive the experiences of others, particularly when they live in different spaces, or they live maybe in different statuses, in different cultures, but we find how much we are all alike in this little blue marble. Won't you call right now, 877-500-5266, to empower the organization that brings that experience to the entire community. We're all joined together when this signal is going out on the air. Our minds are linked together. We may be having different experiences, but we're thinking about the same thing, and we're meditating on the fact that we all bleed red, that we all have aspirations for ourselves and our families and our neighbors and our friends, and even for people we don't even know. And if you think that that's hyperbolic, I dare say that last little interview said to me, it's spot on. So please, either online, kboo.fm, or really right now, give us a little of the best membership drive music, and that's the sound of phones ringing. You can do that toll-free from anywhere in North America, 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-KBOO. We have a modest goal of $500, and our total goal is $85,000. So we keep heaping up small things in order to make great things. And remember, there may be more modest contributions. Some people can do $40 a year. Some people can do $1,000 a year. But everyone who makes a donation is a giant, and they are pushing the way, leading the way forward to all the people who haven't made the call yet. And dare I remind you, dear listener, that 90% of you who are listening right now have not made that call. Why don't you do that now? Just as they say, it takes more muscles to frown than it does to smile. It takes more energy to resist our earnest entreaties than it does to reveal yourself, introduce yourself, and let us add you to the KBOO Good Book. My name is Justin. I'm asking you to call toll-free, 877-500-5266, and I am thrilled to be joined by the one and only Mike Crenshaw coming in here. How are you doing this morning, Mike?
I'm good, Justin. It's good to see you. Say hello to Sam over there. What's happening? That's right, man. Get acquainted with us if you're not already. Obviously, you are if you're listening to the radio and enjoying this morning on your way to work or at work, at the house, wherever you are. Give us a call, 877-500-5266. Go online, kboo.fm. Help contribute to keep this good programming coming your way. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Could you imagine, Justin, actually trying to do what you love 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year? It's like a group effort. As an individual, come on.
Well, that's the thing. It is a group effort, and that's why we have trained thousands and thousands of volunteers, and that's one of the things that those donations go to do. They're keeping the doors open, they're keeping the lights on, but they're also keeping this super serious training program. I like how Jenka put it once. It's a radio university, and we're training so many people, and that's one of the things your donations do. And when those people get that training, they lend voice to their communities, they lend voice to their experience. and they bring that out into the larger community. And it's another way we find out how alike we all are. You take away the colors that people are wearing, you take away the food that they eat, take away maybe their favorite music, and what you find is that we are having a very common experience. And I think that that's one of the most important things about KBOO Community Radio. We're going to hand it back to APA Compass because we're trying to make sure we get as much of that honest programming that you've come to rely on your community radio station. But the only way we can do that is because you pick up the phone and call right now. It'll just take a minute, so do that. 877-500-KBOO.
Thanks for listening to this membership drive special of APA Compass. I'm Sarika Mehta with a rebroadcast of an interview with actor, writer, and comedian Asif Manvi. You know him from The Daily Show with Jon Stewart as the senior Muslim correspondent. Asif Manvi recently published his memoir, No Land's Man, which comedically chronicles his life experiences as an Indian British Muslim American in England, Tampa, and New York. In this segment, we talk about his foray into the acting world while negotiating these identities. But we begin with the concept of petanking.
So there's a story in the book called Petanking, and it is basically the sound that a Indian accent makes, or rather the way a Westerner hears an Indian accent, right? So it's like patank, 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 you know? And, and that is kind of what Indian actors or South Asian actors are asked to do often when they go to these auditions. At least when I first started out in the business and was in New York, and one of my first auditions was I went to audition for the role of a snake charmer. And I remember they said to me, hey, you know, that they asked me, and this is completely earnestly, they were like, do you actually know how to snake charm? And I, you know, was so desperate for the job because I was, you know, an out-of-work actor, that I remember saying to them, I don't know how to snake charm, but I am Indian, so it could be in my DNA, you know? and hoping.
Did they realize you were being sarcastic?
What's that?
Did they realize you were being sarcastic?
The thing is, like, I don't know how sarcastic I was actually being. I think I actually really wanted the job, so I was like, in that moment, I was like, I could learn, you know, I mean, I might have a leg up from any other white actor that, you know, just because of something, you know, whatever. And so I think the whole thing was uncomfortable, and it was, and it's only in retrospect now that I can look back on it and go like, oh yeah, that was insane, that was crazy, you know. But at the time, it was just sort of the par for the course, like you know. And actually, my friend Sakina Jaffrey, who is a terrific actress who people know now from House of Cards, she coined the phrase patanking, which is basically that sound, and we would always talk about that after we came back from auditions, and we would say, you know, did they make you patank? Did you have to patank? And it always meant, inevitably, when they did ask you to patank, you knew that you were going to be patanking when you did that role, you know? So that was the sort of, you know, until I wrote Sakina's Restaurant, and that was my response in some ways, was writing my own one-man show. And I wrote this one-man show called Sakina's Restaurant, which we ended up doing off-Broadway at the American Place Theater. And that was my way of kind of taking back those roles and trying to write roles that were more nuanced and complex than the roles I was getting asked to audition for, you know, most of the time. The interesting thing about that, though, was when I first started going in for these roles where they would ask me to do the Indian accent, I realized that I didn't know how to do the Indian accent. And it was something about the fact that I had suppressed it in myself, that, you know, having grown up in the West and in the UK and America, like Indian accent was sort of the accent of my father. And I didn't want to do that. And on some psychological level, I had forgotten how to do it or never really done it. And so it wasn't until I got asked to do it as an actor in New York for auditions that I had to sort of almost relearn how to do the Indian accent. It was something that, like, I had to sort of find a place in me that was open enough and willing enough to go there to do it, because it was a symbolic, a literal suppression, which was symbolic of something larger, I think.
It's such a bizarre experience to be, I imagine, you know, as a South Asian American actor who is told, can you be more Indian, so to speak, in the superficial, you know, lens of their eyes. In fact, isn't there a story about your role in the film, The Internship, and involving a dialect coach to teach you to be
So when I got Indian. The role in The Internship, which is the movie that came out in 2012 with, 13 rather, with Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson, it was, I played the character of Mr. Chetty, and they wanted that character to have an Indian accent, and I went in and I auditioned with an Indian accent, and one of the producers called me after, or called my manager rather afterwards, and said, we'd like him to come back and read again. We liked what he did. What we'd like to do is hire him a dialect coach. And my manager was like, you know, for what dialect? And they said Indian, and she was like, you know, he is Indian, right? And so it was this weird thing where, like, you know, there was a conversation that we ended up having with one of the producers where I was like, they were like, you know, yes, we know that you're Indian and you do the accent, but the other people had much stronger accents than you did. And I was like, I'm sure they did. You know, but it was sort of me. That isn't always, that always has happened in my career, or many times, where you do the accent, but you try to modulate it in such a way so that, like, you're not doing some kind of Apu-type, you know, caricature. And I remember saying to the producer, I said, look, I'm not going to sound like Apu. I'm going to sound like Fareed Zakaria. Is that okay? And they were like, oh, that's great. That's great. We love Fareed Zakaria.
You know? Exactly. And I wanted to talk more about, you've mentioned that you don't feel that you're any kind of expert on Islam. And then you were cast as the senior Muslim correspondent on The Daily Show. How did you come to terms with those kind of issues and not being an expert on Islam, but being cast as the senior Muslim correspondent in, you know, in this new wave of roles that you take?
Right. Well, I mean, you know, luckily The Daily Show, everything on The Daily Show is ironic on some level, you know. So when I was cast as the senior Muslim correspondent, it was ironically the senior Muslim correspondent, although I don't think my parents realized that initially, and they thought, like, they were like, don't ever talk about Islam on The Daily Show because you know nothing about it, you know. And so, but luckily when I got on The Daily Show and I was the senior Middle East / Muslim / Brown, whatever, doctor, you know, correspondent, it became a way for me to kind of talk about things that I had not even realized that I wanted to talk about, and you know, it kind of I started, like, reporting, quote unquote, you know, on stories from the Middle East and about things that were going on in the world relating to South Asians and being Muslim and being brown, and suddenly, like, I sort of started to feel like, oh, this was kind of important to me. I almost started to feel, I started to like it in a weird way, you know, and that was very disconcerting because for so long wanted to reject that part of myself. And you know, even when I wrote Sakina's Restaurant, it was a way, you know, often writers write things to reveal aspects of themselves, and so it was a way for me to reveal myself, but I never actually wanted to be identified as Muslim in any way or whatever. And then suddenly here I was on this comedy show being identified as Muslim, and it was having an impact. Like, it was actually, like, not on, like, policy or whatever, but, like, was having an impact on, like, American Muslims in
It did
in
have an impact. You won an award for courage in media.
I did, yes.
So there was an impact, in fact.
Yeah. Well, you know, and again, in the book I talk about this, the idea that, like, these awards, I started getting these awards from, like, Muslim organizations, and I realized, like, this is crazy because I'm just doing pratfalls and making funny faces and, you know, standing in front of a green screen. I'm not risking my life. I'm not actually going to Baghdad, you know? And so courage in media sort of felt ridiculous. Like, how much courage does it take to stand in front of a green screen, you know? But I realized, like, as I was getting some of these awards, that they were not giving the award. It was because there was such a lack of representation. There was such a lack of, there was such a vacuum of, like, people talking about this stuff from this perspective of being South Asian, of being sort of a voice that was inside and outside the culture at the same time. There was such a vacuum and such a lack of that in the media, in the mainstream media, that people were just like super excited that there was this guy who was brown and he was like openly talking about American Muslims or the Middle East from the perspective of somebody who is not a white American reporter, you know? And so that thing, they were giving me the award because of what that represented to them, not so much about my own personal courage. At least that's how I ended up justifying it. Because honestly, it's the easiest thing to do in the world is stand in front of a green screen.
Asif Manvi, thank you so much for chatting with me.
Thank you.
That was Asif Manvi, actor and comedian and author of No Land's Man. This was a rebroadcast from an interview on KBOO's stage and studio back in December of 2014. For the full interview, visit our website at apacompass.wordpress.com. I'm Sarika Mehta.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Radio's, KBOO Community Radio's Winter Membership Drive right now. And it's time to call us. Pick up your phone and dial 877-500-5266. I'm Mike, and I'm sitting here with Justin, and we're taking a little break to talk to you today about how to support KBOO Community Radio. It takes a lot of membership, a lot of community support to help us keep doing what we're doing. And what we do is we continue to bring you voices that you're not going to hear anywhere else. And for a $60 minimum pledge, you can get the book by the fabulous author we just had on the air, Asif Manvi, No Land's Man. And if you're an Indo-Muslim, British-American actor who has spent more time in bars than mosques over the past few decades, turns out it's a little tough to explain who you are and where you're from. No Land's Man, in the book, Asif Manvi explores this and other conundrums through stories about his family, ambition, desire, and culture that range from dealing with his brunch-obsessed father to being a high school-age Michael Jackson impersonator to joining a Bible study group in order to seduce a nice Christian girl. So, sounds like the type of story that has a lot of connections anybody could make, even though it's coming from a specific cultural experience. And that's some of the diversity that we bring you here at KBOO. Justin and I were just talking about the world we live in, 7.5 billion people. But if you take away some of the specifics, what you find is that we have more in common than otherwise known. So, we're all people up in this spot, and we want to keep bringing you that diversity that's reflected in your community by being on the air at 90.7 FM. And if you appreciate it, you respect it, you love it, you want to support it, please pick up your phone, dial 877-500-5266.
And online at, excuse me, online at kboo.fm. Mike, I think that is fabulous. I might take it one step further. Huh. I'm going to take the if out of it. They know it's valuable. They've listened. They've been tuning in for years and years and years. Now it's just a small matter of the bill. But this is unlike any other bill because you get to put your price on it. They told us 45, 6, 7 years ago, you can't just give away your signature product and then just hope people will give back and put their own price on it. And yet here we are, almost 24 million commercial free minutes later, and we're still going because people are still making those calls to 877-500-5266. I mean, that's exactly the point, right? If we strip away the costume and we strip away the flavors and we strip away some of these different cultural effects, what we find are people. From start to finish, we find people here. And that is what community radio does in a way that mainstream media, commercial media can't do, because commercial media doesn't have that goal. Commercial media's goal is to deliver you into the hands of advertisers. But our goal is to deliver information to you, to unify you with so many people who are both alike and maybe apparently different. And that's a value. That's a value to the entire community. So please, put a small price on that and call up and introduce yourself. 877-500-5266.
Or you can go online and go to kboo.com. apa.fm. Top right corner, there's going to be a tip jar that says donate. You can click on that and make it easy. I want to promote monthly deductions, EFT, from your debit card. You can even call us up and give it, set up something with your credit card. It's an easy way to donate year-round. You know, what is it, $5 a month? That's $60 a year.
And that'll get you the book No Land's Man by Asif Manvi. And it'll also get you on the KBOO Good Book. It gets you all the discounts with your membership card. And why don't we talk about that when we come back after another segment of APA Compass. We'll be standing by receiving the call. Until then, at 877-500-KBOO.
Yeah.
Today on APA Compass, we're discussing Asian Pacific Americans on TV and film. Earlier this week, we went out and talked to Portlanders at the food carts at Southwest Alder and 10th Streets to ask about how they see APAs represented on the small and big screens.
Can you tell us who some of your favorite Asian American or Pacific Islander characters on TV are?
It would be Jay Cho. He plays a lot. He sings most of the time.
I don't remember the actor's name, but it was definitely Harold and Kumar. You know, those two are funny as hell, so definitely my favorite movie to watch. Quite a few times I watch it already, so it's funny. It's definitely funny.
I think most prominently from my perspective, I've seen them in a lot of the dance reality shows. I can't really think of any that are on television. I can only think of movies, if that's... probably the story of course now I'm going to forget, Amy Tan's book, Joy Luck Club. That's one actually one of my favorite movies, but they're kind of the only characters I can think of that are my favorites, other than the typical like Jet Li kind of karate movies, martial art movies. That's pretty much it.
I don't think I do. I thought like in the early 90s, the Margaret Cho show was kind of an attempt to have something different, but unfortunately it just kind of got nipped in the bud. I think the girl from Gilmore Girls, I don't know if you remember, is a pretty different kind of positive role model or a different representation. It's not so stereotypical.
Who is your favorite Asian American character on TV or in the movies?
Ooh, I'd have to go with Margaret Cho. She was the first one that popped into my head.
Oh, Glee actually has some okay characters too.
I've seen a movie named Harold and Kumar, and there's an Asian character. I don't remember his name, but that's my favorite.
Definitely going to have to go with Tom Haverford from Parks and Rec. Hilarious, even though he was born in South Carolina. But yeah, definitely Tom.
When you were growing up, do you remember seeing Asian American, Pacific Islander characters on TV?
Honestly, no. I mean, and nothing that stood out. No, not at all.
I was a huge Bruce Lee fan, so, you know, that's probably what resonates most with me. Also, kind of seeing Brandon Lee and his career unroll and, you know, the unfortunate tragic event that led to his death. But, you know, it's obviously not a prominent, you know, there aren't any prominent figures other than those two that come to mind, unfortunately. But, yeah.
So do you remember seeing a lot of Asian American or Pacific Islander characters on TV while you were growing up, when you were younger?
Not a ton, although I didn't have cable when I was growing up, so I was kind of restricted. My parents didn't want me to watch a whole lot of TV.
Not really.
No, not at all, actually. TV, when I was growing up, was very under-diverse. There wasn't a lot of diversity for anyone, and I am like half Mexican and half white, so there wasn't a lot of non-white people on TV when I grew up.
Growing up, you know, I was pretty much into, like, me and my friend was pretty much into, like, the kung fu movie, so Bruce Lee was, you know, was definitely the icon, the legend, so definitely him. Bruce Lee is, like, you know, he set up the opened the doors for everybody, so, yeah, Bruce Lee for sure, it was the icon.
How do you feel Asian Americans are portrayed in the media today?
Well, I'm sure it's, you know, there's obviously been somewhat of a progression in terms of what's politically correct. But I think that's led to just Asian Americans being left out of a lot of mainstream media, TV shows, movies, whatnot. You know, I think it's... there's certainly a lack of representation, you know, within the public sphere.
Sometimes it's not always as the main character. Could be someone that is additional sidekick or...
I think it's gotten a lot better, but it still has a long way to go. I mean, one example is, like, I feel really have mixed feelings about, like, how, you know, Dr. Ken is represented in Hangover. I mean, it's really funny. Like, I feel like I can make fun of that because, you know, I'm Asian, but it's a little bit offensive, too. So I have mixed feelings about that. And I know that as women, we're always trying to, you know, defy the stereotype of, like, dragon lady, or with men, I know they have issues with seeming weak. So I know those are stereotypes that are still actively trying to be squashed, but I think it's better, but there's still work to be done.
Do you have any ideas about how Asian American characters are represented today in media?
On TV now, I mean, I know that they're branching out, especially East Asian characters, but they're really kind of put in stereotypical roles. I feel like, you know, a lot of Asians on TV or in movies are like the really nerdy guys, or, you know, they're always stereotypical roles and not really just as a person, and that could be different from the common stereotypes in the United States.
I think, you know, I think we're getting bigger, you know, each film. I think we step up a little bit in like the acting field, so, you know, you see more like Asian Pacific Islander getting more major role out there in Hollywood, so it's looking up for sure.
And we're back, briefly interrupting APA Compass this morning on day number 3 of KBOO's Winter Membership Drive 2015. My name is Justin. I'm joined by Mike. And it is a privilege to take just a minute, since we don't bring you commercials all the rest of the year, to take just a minute to directly interface with our listeners and ask you to start or renew a membership by calling us toll-free, 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-KBOO. Or, of course, online at KBOO.FM. That's one of those two places would take you to the place where you might give us that $60 new or renewing membership to get a copy of Asif Manvi's No Land's Man, or to get something else, in fact. Mike and I are standing on the shoulders of giants right now. You, dear listeners, are the giants by making those donations. Won't you do it right now? Please don't wait for someone else to do it. 877-500-KBOO.
Or you can go to KBOO.FM. If you're in the neighborhood, you can swing by the station, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, right off of 8th and Burnside. Like Justin said, we're standing on the shoulders of giants because we are member supported. Common everyday folks like y'all out there in the community keep KBOO on the air. 48 years strong now, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And standing on the shoulders of giants, man, I see far. I love this perspective. And you know what I see? I see that we're all connected. The physical is a vehicle for the soul, and the individual is indivisible from the whole. So when you donate to KBOO, you're staying interconnected with your community, not just here, but globally. All you people listening worldwide on the internet, KBOO.FM, we love you. You can support us from far away, somewhere where it might be dark right now. It might be hot right now somewhere in the world. You could be listening to KBOO online.
It's true. And you know what else? I think that's an extra reminder to people in Portland metro and regional area who are able to listen through terrestrial radio, to just turn it on in their car or in their house on their alarm clock or whatever. It may be tempted, particularly after 48 years, to take us for granted, to say, well, they've always been there. I never made the call and they're still there. Well, yeah, that's true, because we're not going anyplace. If you do call, if you don't call, we're going to continue doing on, because as Mike says, we see far. But it is a reminder that you are making a gift to people all around the world. Could you do that? Imagine that a penny and a nickel and a dime time every day is empowering people. And we know that it's true. We get emails from people like Ali in Pakistan saying, thank you for your anti-war coverage. So we're not some out-of-the-way little mom-and-pop brigade here. This is a true worldwide media force, and it is worthy of your support. Online at kboo.fm or toll-free 877-500-KBOO.
Or 5266 for those of you that don't know. It might be slow with, you know, the numbers and the letters and whatnot. You know, anyone that donates before 1 p.m. today can take a pair of tickets to Enlightened Theatrics' production of Songs for a New World, an off-Broadway musical. This takes place this Saturday and Sunday at the Grand Theater in Salem, Oregon. We've got the Youth Summit going on tonight over at the Boys and Girls Club on MLK in Northeast Portland, so I want to encourage people to come down there. There's going to be lots of activity. There's a youth talent show tonight, and then there's workshops tomorrow. Registration starts at 11 a.m., and the workshops start at 12 p.m. They've been on a few times this week talking about what they're doing for the community, and this is a place, this is a platform, KBOO is, for people in the community to be able to come and share news and information about what's happening, current events, as well as some of the best music you're going to hear anywhere on the FM dial. Down there on the left side at 90.7 FM KBOO. Pick up your phone. Keep us doing what we do. We love you. We want to hear from you. 877-500-5266.
You know, you make a wonderful point, because another reason that you're considering making a donation to the Mighty 90.7 is that we are such a staunch electronic bulletin board, getting the information out about all the areas, social change activism that's going on, all the different types of work for social justice. They get on through here because that's part of our role. We're getting ready to go back to APA Compass, but we've still got a couple of phone lines open and still got several hundred dollars to do, with just a few minutes to do it. We know you give for your reasons, dear listener, but I think that we are giving you a lot of reasons every hour of every day for 48 years. So please think of some of those reasons, put a small price on it, and take a stand in favor of free speech, access to the public's own airwaves, and this social change work that everyone associated with KBOO is doing. You can do that right now by introducing yourself at 877-500-5266.
And we have an angry APA minute by KBOO's very own Dime Roberts called Common Cause. This piece was originally featured in Dime's column with the Asian Reporter.
It had been an exhausting 2 weeks working on my film, May May, A Daughter Song, a personal story of my mother and I traveling to Taiwan together in 1989. I wanted to find something nice to wear to the event celebrating the anniversary of this radio documentary on which it was based. But shopping for clothes is one of my least favorite activities that I generally put off until the last minute. Despite my fatigue, I ventured to Lloyd Center Mall, trudging along from one store to another. In retrospect, it wasn't a smart move to go shopping following a 2-mile walk on my treadmill. I was trying on jackets and cardigans, but I didn't want to go back and forth to the dressing room. So I took off my small black across-the-shoulder purse and hung it on one of the racks. I walked around for a minute or two before realizing I wasn't wearing my purse any longer. A frantic retracing of my footsteps followed as I darted around every clothing rack, all the while muttering comments about my stupidity and envisioning the ordeal of replacing my credit cards and iPhone. I approached a white sales clerk who merely responded, "Oh, that's too bad." Then as I got more distraught, a very compassionate African-American sales clerk around my age took it upon herself to help me search everywhere in the department. We were soon joined by a white woman who kindly said, "I had this happen to me before, and I'm sure it's in the store somewhere." She tried dialing my phone number, but we couldn't hear it amid the store's muzak. Then another white woman stopped shopping and joined in the search. I asked the sales clerk to call my husband, who was at home, so he could activate the Find My Phone application on my iPhone. We dispersed throughout the store so we could hear the possible sonar alarm of the application if my phone and purse were still in the store. Well, a young blonde woman appeared from the clothing racks, holding up my purse, saying, "Is this someone's bag?" "Yes," I shouted, and then hugged her as she handed me my little purse. Then I called out to the women in the search party with me, "We found it! We found it!" They came running, and I hugged them all with a few tears trickling from my eyes and profusely thanking these kind women. Moral of the story? Don't go shopping when you're tired. Another moral: there are so many great women in this world. But thinking about that event, I reflect on the common cause that brought together an Asian American, African American, and two white women. Yes, it was my cause, but I know in my heart I too would have dropped everything to help another woman who had lost something that was dear to her. I wonder about what it takes for strangers who have such diverse backgrounds to find compassion and kindness for one another. What common causes does it take to not let race and demographics block the impulse within us all to act out of selflessness and to see each other with the same importance we place on ourselves? I think about the divides between races now, especially in light of the shooting of Michael Brown and the death of Eric Garner. Their deaths are not just a concern for the black community, but an issue that affects all people. Senseless tragedies like these could possibly be avoided if we begin to view people first as fellow human beings, like the women in the store did for me that day. No doubt it's too simplistic of an analogy to equate the kindness I experienced among strangers of different colors coming to my aid in a shopping mall with these tragic deaths. But these women could have easily shied away from me, viewing me as some weird, upset woman, and the store clerk might have instead called security. They chose compassion and tried to get to the root of the problem. That day I met strangers who dropped everything to help me. They saw me as a human being and treated me as they would want to have been treated themselves. That was true beauty, true kindness, and I will remember them.
And you are listening to KBOO Portland. That was APA Compass. The time is 9:59 a.m. Coming up at 10, Air Cascadia is off today. We'll hear Flashpoints featuring an interview with Russ Baker about the Bush dynasty, including Jeb, and America's invisible government and the hidden history of the last 50 years. Followed at 11 on the Radio Zine by host Michelle Schroeder-Fletcher speaking with investigative journalist and best-selling author Charles Lewis. So keep it locked right here on KBOO, your community radio. And now this.
Wondering what to do for Valentine's Day? Sword fights, tap dancing, prizes, and a talent show are just a few of the exciting acts you'll see at this year's KBOO benefit, Contessa de la Luna's Valentine Spectacular. Don't miss this annual event that is sure to delight and amaze your eyes and ears. Let La Contessa entertain you Thursday, February 12, 2015, at the Clinton Street Theater. This is the perfect Valentine date night. Show starts at 7 p.m.